Of all of the United States soybean exports, China takes more than half of them.
Farmers fear a potential U.S.-China trade war will sprout in their fields. It's Monday, March 26th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a North Korean defector describes life in the Hermit Kingdom. Students take aim at gun violence. Japanese drums herald cherry blossom season. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A senior Chinese official is warning that a trade war would hurt all sides and set off a greater conflict. Vice Premier Han Cheng said a trade war serves the interests of none. It will only lead to serious consequences and negative impact. While speaking at a development forum in Beijing Sunday, Han added, "We believe trade protectionism against the trend will lead to nowhere." Han did not mention the United States or President Donald Trump by name, whose announcement of stiff tariffs on imported Chinese steel and aluminum was answered with tariffs and duties on a list of U.S. imports. As Trump begins to implement his plan to crack down on China's theft of intellectual property, many U.S. farmers are worried the tariffs will prompt China to retaliate against their products. VOA's Kane Faribault and Bill Gallo report on what some fear could be just the start of a significant trade friction between Washington and Beijing.
Randy Poskin grows soybeans in rural Illinois. Like many in the Midwest, he voted for Donald Trump in the 2016 election. But as Trump ramps up trade pressure on China, Poskin is concerned about getting caught in the middle of a trade war.
I'm not sure at this point, but I'm fearful that they will retaliate on those tariffs and do something to corner soybean exports, wheat, poultry, chicken, beef.
Trump on Thursday set in motion a plan to impose tariffs on as much as $60 billion worth of Chinese imports. The move, if Trump follows through with it, is meant to punish Chinese businesses that benefit from unfair access to U.S. technology. In Beijing, Communist Party leaders are already threatening to retaliate.
China will not sit idly by while legitimate rights and interests are hurt. We must take all necessary measures to firmly defend our rights and interests.
A prime target? Trump's supporters in the U.S. farming industry. Specifically, soybean farmers. One in every three rows of U.S. soybeans is exported to China. That makes soybean farmers uniquely vulnerable to Chinese retaliation.
China imports about 51% of our soybean exports. So of all of the United States soybean exports, China takes more than half of them.
That threat is leaving many farmers like Poskin with mixed feelings about Trump.
Not sure. I mean, I do like the regulation side of things and the way he's backing things off. But these areas of trade are very important to agriculture. We can't interrupt this.
And it may be just the beginning of trade tensions. Trump has said he doesn't fear the negative implications of his tariff decisions, saying trade wars are, quote, good and easy to win. With Kane Faribault, Bill Gallo, VOA
Thank you
News.
All very much.
These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. South Korean Coast Guard says 163 rescued after ferry hit rock. China Air Force drills again in South China Sea and Western Pacific. Scientists track Chinese space station as it falls to Earth. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump has agreed to an unprecedented face-to-face meeting with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un to discuss the country's nuclear program. But activists say that North Korea's human rights violation should not take a back seat at the talks. VOA's Korean service spoke with a North Korean defector who discusses her experiences growing up in North Korea. VOA's Jusimin Oni has more.
For Jo Jing-hae, it's personal.
I do not welcome the talks.
She and her family defected from North Korea 2 decades ago.
In 1980, my father, grandmother, 2 younger siblings, and older sister starved to death. My mother, my younger sister, and I tried to flee for the first time.
Her younger sister, Grace Cho, was just 6 years old.
We would pick and eat wild vegetables, grasshoppers, and even tree bark.
The girls and their mother made several attempts to escape, but were repeatedly captured in neighboring China and sent back to North Korea.
It is very difficult for me to explain the sort of torture, intimidation, and pain we suffered in the Chinese prison and North Korean prison. My mother's eardrum had burst, so she cannot hear on one side, and she's still suffering from the after effects from the prison and tortures.
Now a citizen in the United States, Jo Jung-hae says instead of talks, the U.S. should deal with the North Korean government through sanctions.
The U.S. should continue to be tough on North Korea and not meet with Kim Jong-un until he reaches out first asking for help after complete denuclearization.
While North Korea's nuclear program tops the agenda for the proposed summit, activists say the issue of human rights must remain high on the list.
We are dealing with a set of very complex and difficult issues. The North Korean human rights situation, North Korea's nuclear program, North Korea's missile program. Human rights must continue to be addressed. Human rights must not be sacrificed on the altar of appeasement.
Today, the Jo sisters help other North Korean refugees through their nonprofit organization, but it hasn't taken away the sting of the past.
What keeps me up at night is the thought of my father, my grandmother, my missing sister, and so many others who died needlessly in North Korea.
Jesus Melny, VOA News, Washington.
It's Monday morning. We're glad you're starting your week with us on VOA Asia. Cleanup crews are following behind hundreds of thousands of demonstrators who gathered in Washington and in other U.S. cities Saturday to rally for tougher gun laws following a recent mass shooting that sparked outrage and political activism among young people across the country. Many students from Parkland, Florida, where a shooter killed 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School last month, came here to Washington, D.C. to encourage other young people to stand up for gun control and to urge people 18 and older to vote for lawmakers who do. VOA Asia's David Byrd spent a few minutes with intern Sana Ali, who walked among the demonstrators.
There were a lot of folks on the street yesterday, and you were right in the middle of it. First of all, what was the vibe out there?
Yeah, I mean, to me, when I got there, it almost seemed like a street festival or a carnival. There was a very energetic mood. I think people were very excited to have the opportunity to be there. There were a lot of volunteers helping people out, and there were people with all sorts of signs. Some were more humorous, some were more, you know, serious in their message. And people were waiting for 12 o'clock, which is when the speakers started talking.
And Sana, you got a chance to talk to some folks, some locally and some from far away, about why they were here and what they were demonstrating about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. This was, you know, mostly high school students who were very passionately there. And we spoke to some local D.C. area students as well.
I'm here on a personal matter because at this point, like, it's difficult for us to go to school because we're afraid. Like, a couple years ago, somebody brought a gun into our school and nothing was fired, but just the fact that it's so easy for a high schooler to get a gun and then bring it into a school is terrifying.
And there were several keynote speakers from Parkland, from right. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, including Emma Gonzalez, who right. is, if you have been following the story at all, Emma is the senior who is got a shaved head and did the We Call BS speech back in February.
Right.
But she stood there. Most of her speech was silence because she was yeah. marking how long it took for the massacre to occur, right?
Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point we were doing an interview with someone and I heard her starting her moment of silence. So yeah, people were just listening silently, you know, and we saw some girls crying, high school students crying, but mostly people were very excited to be there. The thing was, there were high school students who were from high schools across the D.C. area, some who have not directly been affected, but just they all had that fear about gun violence in them. And they had come out because somehow that felt real to them.
You also talked to some of the educators about this movement, right?
Yeah, there were a lot of teachers, actually. There were signs about, you know, equip me with books, not guns. And we spoke to one of the teachers and why she was here and asked her what she expects out of the march.
We I'm hoping to see some just common sense legislation on gun control, no automatic weapons, background checks, anything that can support not getting weapons of war into private citizens' hands.
Sana Ali is an intern with VOA Asia. She graduated from Columbia University with her master's in journalism. Sana, thank you very much.
Thank you.
A new poll conducted by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research indicates 69% of Americans surveyed thought gun laws should be tightened. Overall, the survey indicated 90% of Democrats, 50% of Republicans, and 54% of gun owners favored stricter gun control laws, but nearly half of Americans, according to the poll, do not expect their politicians to change gun laws. Coming up, keeping the beat of cherry blossom season. You're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, ride-hailing firm Uber Technologies has apparently agreed to sell its Southeast Asian business to bigger regional rival Grab in what would be the U.S. company's second retreat from Asia. The deal, which could be announced as early as today, marks the first big consolidation in Southeast Asia's ride-sharing business. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Japanese taiko drummers from along the U.S. East Coast performed Sunday in Washington to celebrate the start of the city's annual Cherry Blossom Festival. VOA Asia's Skylar Ogden joined taiko performers Karen Young and Kumiko Yamamoto live on Facebook to talk about the cultural roots of this type of drumming and being in an all-female Asian band.
Karen, tell me about the Genki Spark.
Yes, well, Genki is a Japanese word that means happy, healthy, full of life, and energetic. It's a group that I had started in 2010. There are about 700 taiko groups in North America. I wanted to start the Genki Spark particularly to create a place for Asian women to be loud and proud, be visible. We have women in our group from teens to over 60 and be grandmas from all over Asia, and we're really excited to be here.
Now, I don't know much about taiko drumming. Can you tell me a little bit about its origins and how it kind of evolved?
Sure. Well, taiko is a Japanese word that means drum. The kind of drumming that you're seeing today that we've done is called kumidaiko, which is ensemble drumming, and actually fairly new in the 50s and the 60s in Japan and in North America. And there are about 700 different groups here in North America. Kumiko could talk a little bit about its origins in Japan, but in North America, it's really spread through the spread of Buddhism, but also through Japanese culture, and also Japanese-American and Asian-American activists that really wanted a way post sort of World War II as a way to really kind of celebrate our culture and not hide.
You know, people can feel the time and also the festival. It's like a small village in a village, so they play the taiko and as an accessory and dancing around. And it's in the theater, no and kabuki and traditional Japanese play, so they use all the background music.
So its history, its origins is more used in kind of religious ceremonies. Tell me about, of course, this year has been such an important year for women with the Me Too movement and a lot of changes and impact going on. What do you think taiko drumming and your band does for the women's movement and for women's empowerment?
I think as a women's group, you know, we've been really, really passionate about making sure that, like, all of our voices are heard. And so Kumiko led the Genki Spark when we performed at the Boston Women's March, where we performed in front of 175,000 folks. And I think particularly to be out there as Asian women and telling our stories has been really key.
You can see the drummers in action and more of Skylar Ogden's interview with them on VOA Asia Facebook. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can hear us around Asia on many radio stations like Chiang Mai University Radio FM 100 in Chiang Mai University, Thailand. We thank everyone there who is tuned in today. If you can't hear us on the radio, there are plenty of places online to find us as well. iTunes and SoundCloud are very good. VOA Asia Facebook streams our program each and every day, and you'll also find us on our website at voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman. Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.